we're going to be talking about global competencies. If we have people here from Toronto, from Ontario, this is sort of the jumping off point, but we do have panelists who have worked outside of Ontario, outside of Canada, and so we're really trying to have good takeaways for people, whether you teach here, whether you're a librarian here or elsewhere, so that there's a broad spectrum of, I think we're good, audio, a broad spectrum of takeaways for everybody who works with students, who works with classrooms, again, to reiterate that idea that comics are for the classroom, comics are for everybody. So my name is Amy Wright. It's kind of a joke. I am the first president of Library Comics. So we have a new roundtable in the American Library Association, and I am the president-elect, or because I am a dual citizen between the U.S. and Canada, that's say I'm the prime minister of comics. I'm also a former manager of school outreach at the New York Public Library, and in that capacity, I worked on actually the largest school library outreach partnership between the public and school libraries in New York. We worked with about 500 K-12 schools in New York City.
Eric, you next.
My name is Eric Kim. I'm an artist and illustrator. I've been doing this since 2003. I look kind of grumpy. I do workshops with the Toronto Public Library, and so I go from branch to branch and just run through basic ideas and instruct youth from 8 to, like, from youth to adults in terms of, like, how to develop stories. And it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so I just had a baby in January. That's my number one thing right now. And so that's where my brain is. She's all good. I'm not at TDSB, I'm at an independent school, Branson Hall, which is just behind this library with all girls. But I was a public school teacher librarian in middle school, and I was classroom teacher before that in Peel District School Board.
Hi, my name's Jordan Graham. I am a reference and digital resource librarian with the Toronto District School Board in our Central Library Learning Resources Department.
Hello, I'm Thomas. This is not my Gundam, it's just a rental. I'm a teen services librarian in Richland County for Richland Libraries in Columbia, South Carolina. So I am completely unfamiliar with the Canadian education system, but I work primarily with 12 to 18-year-olds, and I write reviews for No Flying, No Tights, and manage their social media, and I run a comics and libraries podcast called The Secret Stacks.
So this was purposeful, pulling together a panel of librarians, educators, education-adjacent, people who are creators and also work with kids, to basically talk about the fact of education is it's not just confined to the classroom. Like, so many of us, we're working with teachers, we're working with parents, we're working with students, and there's so many opportunities that I think go above and beyond maybe the titles or the curricular uses that we're familiar with. So just so we're all starting from the same page, hey, Global Competencies 101. So this is pulled directly from the Toronto District School Board, Global Competencies. So we're going to talk about five main areas. What we're going to talk about are some particular titles that we've either think would be really good to teach a particular competency that we've seen used, or that we're like, hey, this could be a really cool way to use this title. We have some programming ideas, but we're going to have a free form kind of discussion as we go with, again, the best takeaway that any title can be used to teach to a particular competency, a particular classroom purpose, depending on how it's used. It's very much about the instructional alignment. I think that there's a lot of confusion still around comics and graphic novels. There's still a lot of that stigma that they're not quite legitimate for the classroom. And so we want to pick, you know, the perfect titles. Look, I'm a huge fan of Mouse and Persepolis, but there are a lot of great comics for the classroom beyond Mouse and Persepolis. So we're happy to talk about some of those that maybe you're familiar with and maybe some ones that are new to you. So we're going to kick it off. You ready for it? With critical thinking and problem solving. So, do we want to talk about some of the titles? We have some suggested titles for critical thinking and problem solving. So, the global competency for critical thinking and problem solving is, I think about different ways to solve a problem, I remember what I've learned, I ask questions to solve my problems and to learn new things, I can read a variety of texts, I ask questions, I make a plan, I follow steps, I solve new challenges, I investigate problems. So very much, if we have Americans in the audience, we're talking at like Common Core State Standards or new standards for inquiry-based learning. I mean, this is building basic research skills, and this is one of the first steps. So does anyone want to start us off? We have a few titles, but if you want to talk about some titles that are here or some other ones in terms of critical thinking and problem solving.
Well, I don't think you necessarily have to. It could be almost any text that you choose to do this with, right? And I think that's the one thing you have to realize about global competencies is that almost all titles will fit within each section or use all of them. So when I'm taking a look at something like this, right, just even having a graphic novel in a class set for even book clubs, for example, giving the option of being able to choose one, all of a sudden you're thinking about your questions maybe a little bit more differently as opposed to with another text. I was thinking, as an educator, what I was thinking more so is the whole idea that when we ask students questions about texts, we actually a lot of times ask them to show us their work visually. So I actually was thinking the opposite. It wasn't necessarily going into a text. It's actually taking what you understand and make your understanding visually with it. And I was thinking about this. One of my friend's daughters texted me, who's in grade 10. She wasn't reading a graphic novel, but she wanted to know who the main protagonist was in a book that we'd both read. And I said, you know, I think what you want to do right now is map out all the characters and discover which one is the one. And as soon as Amy had sent the slideshow, I was thinking about her, and I was thinking, it's so interesting that that's the first thing I asked her to do was to map it out, to draw it out, to see where people are connected. So it was the opposite way, is that we always ask students to graphically show their work as well.
I mean, do we have any Game of Thrones fans in the audience? I'm sure we do. One of the most popular things floating around the internet right now are Game of Thrones kinship diagrams. So if anybody studied anthropology at university level, kinship diagrams, they're a real thing, y'all. And so it's a really great way to talk to students, like we do talk about when we talk about different monarchies or particular like imperial houses. Like the Game of Thrones Imperial Houses, again, mapping out characters and how everybody is related.
One thing I find really interesting with these texts and with some others, like Mega Guide to Databases, for example, is that they're able to distill these really complex ideas and introduce them in a way that's very non-threatening and approachable. So it encourages rereading, it encourages, I think, a further, like a deeper look into it if a reader prefers. So I was actually using the databases look a little while back, and I found it really fascinating how in a very short span of just a few pages, I was like, oh, I want to dive deeper into these ideas. I felt encouraged to go further with it. So it's just really fascinating in that way.
Yeah, that's what I think about when I see this too, is that graphic novels offer such a unique experience for that deep learning and for making those inferences when you're looking at the text, but also the visuals and just the process that's happening as a reader there. And so, yeah, really getting into that critical thinking through the reading experience.
I haven't read this fourth title on the end about the Nexus of Secret Society, but Secret Coders, The Drawing Lesson, and the Annie Sullivan, Helen Keller book share in common that adage about if you want to truly learn something, teach someone else how to do it. And so in Secret Coders, how do you prove that you know programming? Well, can you tell this mechanical turtle how to navigate a maze or draw a certain shape as it's walking? What are the exact steps? Where do you turn? How far do you walk? And with the drawing lesson, if you wanted to draw a wristwatch, how would you break it down into its component shapes? And what color would they be? And what perspective would it be? And a lot of things that I'm sure you, Eric, can coach someone through better than I ever could. And then, of course, with the Helen Keller story, you know, how do you teach someone how to signal what they're trying to communicate, and how do you break that down into, like, even just spelling a word? How do you convey letters and the sounds that they make? And I think those three, and probably the fourth one too, all really good examples of that, that learning through teaching that has worked really well in my library. So.
No, absolutely. Whose was the Not-So-Secret Society?
Oh, that one was me. Okay. Yeah, and that one was actually more so based on the content. Just because it's, has anyone read it in the audience? Okay,
no,
so
it is a secret society.
It's very secret. So it is a diverse team of students, and they create something for the science fair, and something goes horribly wrong. But there's a lot behind sort of the ethic and moral values in the STEM field. And so for me, this was actually just one of those content pieces where I thought that worked really well with that critical thinking.
We also have some programming ideas that our panel came up with for teaching critical thinking and problem solving. And again, these are by no means a prescriptive list. The idea is to just have jumping off points. I'm sure you have programming that you're already doing with your students that's really successful. And just knowing that comics and graphic novels are part of education. They wouldn't be a separate thing or anything. They're just part of integrated education. So we have Make Your Own Comic that you could actually track production through fundraising, brainstorming, collaboration, and actually walk them through the whole process. You could even talk about things like different funding models. How would you make your pitch? How would your pitch differ if you were working for like a big name comic, like pitching to Marvel or DC, or maybe if you wanted to get your product picked up on Kickstarter? We have Code Camp. The Code Camp, is that useful? Yeah.
I had the different code camp groups. Richland Library has partnered before with 100 Girls of Code. There was a group that took a look at different coding camps across the U.S. and found that it was mostly boys going to these things. And they said, well, how can we recruit more girls into STEM and into coding and creating environments where they feel like their voices are heard and their contributions are valued? And so that was a lovely partnership. And then there's a list of websites here with a lot of great tools for learning coding and different exercises to help kids like wrap their brain around machine language and giving machines instructions to build things.
Do you have other suggestions from Cal? Go on to the next one. So again, the idea would be we have some suggested titles and then extension activities. So comics can be a core mentor text, they could be a supplemental text, they could be an extension text. There's so many different uses for scaffolding these with instructional purpose in the classroom, for different audiences and different grades. We're speaking very broadly, but I mean the titles, even the four titles you have in front of you, could be used even for grades, I would say, as low as grade 2. People are like, ah, I wouldn't do grade 2. Hey, newsflash, you could also take a panel. One of the great things about the Helen Keller book is panels that are actually told from Helen's perspective, and they have a great use of color to sort of evoke the fact that she doesn't have the sense of sight, she doesn't have the sense of hearing, so it's different ways that she experiences, and they use color in a great way. So you could even take one or two panels from a particular title and use it for a lower grade, and then for upper grades, you could actually have them read the full title. So we're gonna go on to global citizenship. So, global citizenship and character, global competency number 2. I respect diversity. I help solve human and environmental issues. I show responsibility. I help others in my community. I am safe when I use digital tools. I am a positive member of my community. I use digital tools safely and responsibly. I create solutions to real world problems. Does anybody want to kick it off, Eric?
Oh, yeah, with this one, there were a lot of suggestions for book titles. I feel like there's a large initiative now. A lot of creators really approaching comics as a way to articulate their struggles and what they're going through. So it's a pretty amazing time, anyways, just to be a reader, I think. I think March was my recommendation, and so I think that with graphic novels, they help create a low barrier for entry for people to begin to get a broader understanding of different issues, how it afflicts other people, and I think it helps develop empathy. It's an interesting way to be able to see through someone else's eyes and to see questions that are articulated in a way that's, I feel, non-threatening, I guess.
Yeah, empathy was the main word that kept popping into my head with this one, too. And when we talk about global citizenship and character, we can also talk about character education initiatives, if that's something that we're engaging in. So I know at TDSE, we create resource lists on specific character education traits that we focus on each month. And so with those lists, we include graphic novels in the lists integrated with other print and digital resources. But these are a great way to experience those diverse perspectives or lived experiences and have that empathetic reading.
Richmond Library had a partnership with a group called Girls Rock that does music education for boys and girls, but again, trying to lift up the women in the community. And one of the components was several songwriters wanted to talk about social justice issues, and they thought, well, what if we had a book club to go with this? And so the Girls Rock Social Justice Book Club came out of that. And so they meet quarterly in the library, and we help distribute the books for them. And one of the books they chose was March, Book One. And they found out while they were ordering that for just a couple dollars more, they could get the whole trilogy in that nice little slipcase edition. So we got to just pass out free March trilogies to everyone. And young people are very receptive to the idea that there are very horrible things going on in the world. But if they act now, they might be able to tilt the progress of history towards something a little more humane and accepting. And I find that very encouraging coming from them.
100%. I think one of the graphic novels we have here that I'll call out, if you're not familiar, The Race to Incarcerate. So this is a nonfiction graphic adaptation of The Race to Incarcerate. It's all about mass incarceration and privatized prisons, particularly in America. And it's a really fantastic example of taking something that there are a lot of factors that go in and actually showing things in a way that graphically makes sense and really resonates with a lot of people. This was actually a recommendation when we were working in New York. This was a recommendation from a social studies teacher, and she had been using this in her classroom with students, and a lot of students were very much provoked to action and really took initiative to say, like, we want actually better rights for people who are incarcerated. We want them to have communication rights. This is, you know, unfair, a lot of things that are going into mass incarceration, especially the privatization of prisons in America. And it was because of this graphic novel. I think similarly with March, you see, so March has been adopted, if you aren't aware, in a lot of city curriculums. It's also on, I think, more than about 25 different first-year college and university reading lists. It was also chosen recently for One Book, One San Diego. Makes sense, you know, San Diego Comic-Con being the biggest moneymaker in the city of San Diego. They chose March for One Book, One San Diego. And when March Book 1, Book 2, and Book 3 had come out, the creators had actually come to San Diego Comic-Con and actually led youth marches on the floor of San Diego Comic-Con. So to speak to your point, I think it's actually, there's a real enthusiasm for activism, especially amongst the younger generation, that is really reflected in a lot of the reading choices. So,
100%. Yeah.
Sorry. I was just even thinking, and someone said it in the panel this morning, just before lunch, the power in the panels. I really appreciated that, like, taking a closer look. I went back and reread March Book 1 recently, and I read it actually on my iPad. I have the book, but when you have a baby, it's a little bit easier on technology sometimes. But just also zooming in, taking that opportunity to zoom in, but also for some of my students, the visual piece of this within the graphic novel is we read a lot of prose books where they don't necessarily see the images. And so as soon as they see the images, they know that it's real. They know that this is something that is true. So I think that that's what connects them also with this, that within the global citizenship, is that all of a sudden they realize that, especially with nonfiction graphic novels, that you're able to see something.
Yeah, no, real world consequences, unlike an actual, I know with a lot of students who'd maybe had other texts for civil rights, they read March, and it sort of, it really invigorated the discussions in ways that we hadn't seen with a lot of print-only texts. And a lot of students walked away and like, wow, a lot of things that happened back then are sort of still happening. We talked a lot about voter suppression. And there was a lot of enhanced interest in civic engagement and global citizenship. So
In addition, you learn through March about Martin Luther King Jr.'s comic book he used to spread his message, The Montgomery Story, which you can read for free online.
Yeah, so comics
were already spreading activism several decades ago.
No, 100%. And they were historical documents. Like, you have them as informational texts to actually transmit, you know. We had the military using them throughout, like, the World Wars to actually have informational texts. We have them first teaching civil disobedience, like, through civil rights. Yeah.
There's something about, I think, the immediacy of comics that makes it really fascinating. So you're really able to develop a very affordably like stories about your own culture, your own history, put that into like a medium, and then be able to distribute it to everybody. And that makes it really like just a fascinating thing to do. You're essentially creating like, you know, these symbols that you can build upon and develop and get that out really quickly. You know, so. I'm always very for comics.
Yeah, we're pro comics now. So we had a lot of ideas about programming, but some. Who did the Shark Tank? This is so cool. I love this.
All right, so my library likes to do the Shark Tank program for teens, where you know they have to pitch a product and tell about how they're going to market it and get the pricing and all this stuff. And one year we decided we're going to do Shark Tank, but it's going to have a social awareness component to it. So since everyone was in Colombia, they had to pick an issue that affected everyone else and pitch a product just as the solution to that thing. And I want to say the winning design was like a solar-powered awning for the fronts of businesses, because there were several streets in Colombia where you just feel like you're burning alive under a magnifying glass. So like, oh, if it's really bright out, well, then these awnings will just stretch themselves out and people can just cool off for a bit.
Got also writing an essay. Was that one of your suggestions?
Oh, yeah.
It was a
good suggestion. I think having kids make comics, having anybody make a comic, is really just about like trying to essentially make an illustrated essay. So it encourages them to like go through their research, go to articulate, and then panel by panel actually create almost like storyboards of their experiences and their ideas. And I find it's a way to get them very thoroughly immersed, because it's not only about, obviously, subject research, but it's also about visual research. So if they can really capture the times that, that they're looking to discuss more, then it can be a fantastic way to get them engaged with archival materials, any kind of photographic references, resources, films, anything that'll really give them a sense of place and time that this, you know, that these were real events.
Should we have
Oh, yeah, so these are those character education lists that I had mentioned. This is just an example of somewhere where we're really intentionally integrating graphic novels with other types of resources, because they belong there.
And again, everything is hyperlinked, and you have, I'll have the bit.ly link again at the end of the slideshow. Okay, so communication. So this is, I listen actively, I respect and listen to different ideas, I communicate my ideas using a variety of tools, I ask questions to learn new ideas, and I share my learning in different ways. So basically, like, really fantastic instruction 101. Like, we're talking about, like, best practices for good pedagogy, whether we're talking about libraries or schools, and some really fantastic titles. So anybody want to talk specifically about a few of them? I mean, I love Boxers and Saints. If you don't know Gene Yang's Boxers and Saints, first of all, in terms of the historical record, there's actually not a lot written about the Boxer Rebellion, especially not for a younger, sort of middle grade high school audience. And one of the best things about this is told from different perspectives of the rebellion. And this actually fits in for global competencies here in Ontario and in Canada and the US. One of the biggest things is opposing viewpoints, compare and contrast. And so it's really important for students to take a historical issue and really see from multiple perspectives, especially something as contentious as war or rebellion. It's never so simple as like pro and anti. There's a lot of discussions, especially like you get into World War II, you can talk about things like Vichy France or Poland under occupation. I mean, there's a lot of things that are a little bit more complicated about history, and this is a really great way to start to enter in that discussion of complicated histories, hearing from multiple perspectives.
I can give a quick one to Flawed. So this is a graphic novel that was created after an NFB film on the same name. So this would be a really great process to go through, pair it with that NFB film, and just look at that creation process and how the artist is sharing that story in these two different mediums.
Hey kiddo, if you haven't read yet, this is a relatively new, it's just come out in the past year. This is a nonfiction graphic novel about growing up and dealing with childhood trauma and addictions in the family. So it's not something that's really talked about. The author actually he didn't grow up with his parents. He pretty much grew up raised by his grandparents. You may know him more famously as the author of Lunch Lady. So this was a very vulnerable, very personal graphic novel for him to produce. And it's really resonated with a lot of young audiences. A great way to talk about being vulnerable. Talks about even things like toxic masculinity and bullying, which we don't have enough graphic novels yet about that. So really fantastic platform. I think especially what we are hearing is having something visual is a great platform for having those discussions about vulnerable issues, because you have a common place that you can start from. And you can talk about a particular panel, and then it becomes this great jumping off point for decoding and like pushing past and actually maybe talking about personal experiences.
Mm-hmm. I think something...
Something
interesting about comics is back to the affordability thing, because they are so affordable and relatively easy to develop on an individual basis that you can have like a lot of stories that are developed that are, I guess, countercultural ideas, ideas that obviously go against the grain of everything. So, like stories that are about, say, toxic masculinity, and being able to just have that issue out in the open to discuss it. I think it's obviously sort of powerful, but I think that's something that's inherent in the medium of comics. So whenever you pick up a book or a comic book and you're reading it, it feels like you're sort of taking in like a different perspective and a unique perspective, I think.
One of my favorite things about Vera Brosgold's Be Prepared, and I see this in negative reviews of the book, so I feel a need to fire back at those critics, is they'll say, well, some of the kids in this comic at this summer camp story, they're jerks to each other, or some of them...
Kids are never jerks to each other, right?
Kids are never jerks to each other. Or these characters were friends, and then they broke up, and we didn't see them become friends again at the end of the story. And I'm like, that's the most honest depiction of a summer friendship I've ever seen. And I think that's something that kids pick up on really well, and the other lessons within the book, they'll be more receptive to them because the emotional content was honest to them. It didn't try to give them like a special lesson at the end of the day. But also in terms of how all the characters communicate, they befriend each other in different ways. So the way the girl tries to impress one friend and gets along gets her bullied by another kid. And so like everyone's got their own thing going on in Be Prepared. And I really enjoy that. I think the kids enjoy that too.
That's awesome. Can I add something to Be Prepared as well? I don't like this baby.
Is the whole idea that my friend's daughter, who is... not the biggest reader, fell in love with Be Prepared. And it led, I think that's the other thing that this parent did, was she listened to her daughter, who loved it. And she came over to my house, and I said, she's like, do you know if she's written anything else? I said, oh, yeah, Anya's Ghosts. Go ahead, take it off my shelf. I said, it's been a while since I've read it, so I can't remember if it's necessarily for your daughter or not. She texted me and said, I wish you had told... No, she didn't say I wish. That's me putting on that. Is like, because I sometimes think in our minds, that's what I want to say, is that we have in our heads that we don't want to give students another book because it might be too old for them or whatnot. She found an author that communicated in a way that she loved. She loved it. She cried. She had such an emotional connection to her other book as well. And she's like, I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And my friend, the mom of the daughter, looked at me and said, no, my daughter was totally into it and wanted to talk about it and wants to read it. So I sometimes think that, you know, this is where you have to kind of put these types of books out as well in front of the readers, no matter what. You know, we talked about gatekeepers a lot last year as well, and that whole idea of, oh, I think that might be too... No, don't do it.
Yeah.
You know? just hand it over and listen and take that time to have those conversations. Because, you know, I even with Be Prepared, it took me a moment to put that in my library to find, to figure out, because of the way the kids were with one another. But then I thought, you know what? This is no different than me reading Judy Blume when I was a kid or any of those types of things. So you have to kind of have it there for them to have that accessibility and to see those texts.
Yeah. I think, too, with comics, when we talk about communication, one of the best parts of comics and graphic novels is that we're talking about multiple means of communication all at once. And there's a word for this in art history called multivalence, multiple layers of meaning. And one of the best things about comics and graphic novels is they have that. So you can have a younger audience read Be Prepared. You can have an adult reader read Be Prepared. And we're all getting slightly different things out of it, but it's all that layered meaning in there. Anybody who tries to tell me, oh, comics are only communicating one or two messages, I'm like, hey, so do you know political cartoons? That's kind of what comics are based on. And there's a lot of meanings there. Not to mention the fact that what are the Marvel movies almost most famous for? Easter eggs. There's always sometimes more meanings, and depending on the reader and the audience, and it's a great sort of treasure trove to pick up those different meanings and methods of communication. So I'm going to go to the programs, if that's okay. So we have some suggested programs for communication. Just a lot of ideas.
Can I just, I didn't add any of these ideas here, but can I also say that I think, especially in a world now where I guess children are hyper aware of how they feel about things and how they respond to whatever, and there's also the perfectionist. What I appreciate about the graphic novels or the comics, when you're taking a look at them, all the drawings are different. So the entry point for a lot of them, even in communication, is that all of a sudden they realize that they don't have to necessarily, and I'm not saying that not any of them aren't artwork or anything like that, but just, there's just different entry points for it as well. So, and that's what I appreciate on it, that whole idea that it's created and there are messy times and there's moments where it's expressed in a way that you can, it's just another entry point.
Like there's no one way to do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think we see that with picture books. And again, there's some very much arbitrary delineations made between picture books and comics and graphic novels. I'm here to tell you, I was just at the Eric Carle Museum, so AKA the arbiter of all things picture books, and they were like, yeah, it's just visual storytelling. So, Eric Carle Museum, it's just visual storytelling. So, and we know that different picture books resonate with different audiences, different artwork, different colors, and like, that's the beauty of picture books. Like, again, it's, there's so many different messages. One picture book might resonate really well with one reader, and the same picture book, you're like, this is always my go-to storytime favorite. Somebody's like, no. Not for me, and that's okay. Like that's the beauty of it, you know. Giving people all these different methods of communication. One of the things we did want to call out is different things with facial expressions. We talk a lot about communication. One of the best things about comics is we learn the language of visual storytelling, especially with facial expressions. And it's a really good way to even talk to students about the disjuncture, that you might have a character wearing one facial expression, but maybe saying something different. Because, yeah, sometimes we don't always exactly say what we're feeling, right? And it's a great jumping off point to talk to students about that, or to talk about what a different facial expression can convey and how that might be received. And even just the fact that when we're talking about comics, it's also a really good entry point to talk about informational texts. Those of us who work, what do we do all day, every day? Informational stuff. We write emails, we put together PowerPoints. We are essentially creating information manuals all day, every day. And when we talk about especially a science comic or a how-to comic, it's a great way to think about the visual storytelling and the storyboarding of how to create a narrative and how to put together an informational text.
Something also really great about being able to identify with characters that you see within a text or a comic. So, like if I see, like speaking for myself, like if I see a Korean character within a text, then I feel encouraged to read more about it. I feel my self-esteem or ego develop through there. So, identification, being able to see oneself in that character's role, I think, can be very empowering. So it's another meta-text way of reading into the narrative, and also just having a way of identification associated with science texts or with English texts, or if we're having dramatic stories where people are revealing their emotions and all the rest. I think, you know, it can be really great just to encourage discussion.
So we have collaboration and leadership. I think probably, I'm being for all of us, this was also another one that there's so many great examples. collaboration and leadership. So I learn with and from others. I teach others. I share and take turns. I work with others to create new things. I listen to others, and I help others understand ideas.
If I talk about a silent voice, I'm going to lose it, so I should go last.
I can talk quickly about mine then.
Yeah.
So I included up here a lot of titles. I think actually the last three along the bottom here. So we have Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Sparks and Delilah Dirk. So these are all titles that feature the unlikely duo, which we see so often in comics and graphic novels. And I think that's a great starting point to get into that collaborative mind space, and also talk about respecting those diverse perspectives, people who have different lived experiences than yourself, because all of these, for some reason, are an unlikely pairing, and together they're able to accomplish something that they wouldn't have been able to otherwise. So I just think sort of this, in the spirit of global competencies, and that attitude, and openness to diversity, I think that's a great starting point.
Do you want to introduce the audience to Sparks if they don't know it? Because I hadn't heard about it.
So the thing I love about Sparks is these two cats who have escaped from a lab. One of the cats is terrified of the outdoors and never wants to go outside, and the other cat isn't afraid of anything. So it's just a really lovely pairing too, but also a great example of, you know, people who are very different but can work together and accomplish something.
I want to call out any other titles you have, or you ready for it, Thomas? Go for a silent voice.
So a silent voice, tear. I take it some people have either read it or they've watched the movie, which was an excellent adaptation. This is one that when our teen space opened, we decided to have a manga table because the graphic novels were a couple floors apart, and we wanted to get the first few volumes of several different manga. And we all knew we wanted to get a silent voice down there. It's such an important work about a girl who uses a hearing aid device, much like the girl in El Defo from C.C. Bell's book just back there. And this boy bullies her, and they break her device, and it costs too much money, and the mom is like, we're going to have to go to a different school. And then that's just like act point one, because what happens after that is everyone who encouraged this bully and made it seem like a good idea and funny, and we're all going to go after this deaf girl for being weird, they all turn on the bully, and they all start crying crocodile tears to the teacher, and they're like, oh, he made us do this to the girl, and it was all his fault, he's evil. And then there's a time jump, and now they're all in high school, and he has this horrible guilt on his shoulders, where he's like, I don't know how to make up for this, I'm just a bad person, I should probably just die, I have no friends. Every time you see the world from this point of view, everyone has X's on their face because, well, there's no one I can ever befriend again because everyone in school knows I bullied the deaf girl out of our school. But then they meet again and they get a new opportunity to communicate, and he's taken like these sign language lessons, and there's no clean resolution to any of this because they start a new friend group and it has all of its own layers of drama. And the teens who read this, I may have talked it to maybe only a couple of teens, and they got so addicted to a silent voice, they would tell all the other teens who came to the library, oh my god, you gotta read this book, you won't believe what it's about. And I'm just sort of listening in the background, like, yes, we got it. And they'd be fighting each other over who would get to read the next one all up through the 7-volume series. And you could notice before and after they read these 7 volumes, afterward, they may not quote the series, they may not cite any of the character interactions, but there's been a change in how they empathize with others and try to get their point of view on an issue, how they listen to other people. Again, not a 0 to 100% thing, but like you can tell they're absorbing things because it came through in a story and it was honest and it didn't present good and evil people. It presented flawed people trying to be better, and the teens really respected that, and it's just such a good story.
You've sold it very well. I haven't read it myself, but I'm going to read it too. Do you have any other ones that we want to call out?
Well, I appreciate the mention. I haven't read it either, but I appreciate the time jump, because even with the outside circle, and I think that with many graphic novels as well, is that whole idea of it gives you an opportunity to realize that things don't happen. So again, going back to a prose book, you know, you'll read a chapter and then you get to the next chapter and you don't know what's happened in between. And with a graphic or comic book, you will be able to take a look and they'll say the time, right? 15 years later, and you realize that there is time, and it can show it, and it allows you to have that conversation. And I think, again, we're talking about bridging all of the competencies, right? So there's that opportunity to have that conversation, and especially via book clubs, because I sometimes think that when we don't have a graphic novel as an option for students to get into, they're not realizing that it can do it just as effectively, but also give you that opportunity to realize, okay, so what happened in that time? Like, what are we looking at here? What, you know, what could be missing? That could be something that you would want the students to actually explore and say, okay, what could have happened in here for these characters to have changed, right? And why is it the readers have had that reaction to it? Because they know that it's not like this. So
we don't have to be the things people label us as, right?
That's right. Absolutely. And I know that I'm going to point to Scott because he's out there. Because you there are moments where you take a look at something and you take it for what you just see, and then if you just do that, then you're not going anywhere with it, right? So that evolution that happens when you read something or when you can see it and have that experience and have that shared experience, right? You started it, then the next person, and then you don't have to, you know, you may have started it, you know, 5 years ago, but all of a sudden they're all talking about it and you're like, yeah, I'm one of, you know, 100 people that are now part of this whole conversation. So, and that's the beauty of these types of books, and especially when there are more than one book in a series, because then you have that whole, you know, you have the ones that say you have to read it completely in order, and then there's the ones that say, oh, I just read them in this way, but they still got something out of it, and they still learned something from it.
We had actually, like, again, this was a great competency. There were so many great options, so we had some really fantastic ranges of suggestions, and again, so many different things that you could do in the classroom, in the library, with students, with parents, as family activities. Without pointing out, I mean, one of the best things about comics is they are an ultimate collaborative art form. You have a writer, you have an artist, but you also have a penciler, and you have an inker, and you might have a letterer, and you might have an editor, and these are all things to point out to students that there's a big business, actually, that goes into. So I think it was Eric, he suggested the writer's room. That's a great suggestion. Do you want to talk a little bit more about it? Because you've done that, hey?
Yeah. When I had created like a workshop and intended for adults, but it was mostly like teens that ended up signing up. So we were working on stories, and then they wanted, like, after I went through the workshop series, they wanted to do more, so we just kept going.
Awesome.
And then I didn't know what to do, so I was like, let's make an anthology. And they went for it. They did the fundraising. They made the stories. They found a printer. I was giving them like very limited coaching. I was just these are my experiences. You can do this with a photocopier. Don't worry, it'll be fine. You know, and they were fantastic. It was amazing just seeing them do all this and not needing very much from me. Maybe some technical things with working with InDesign, but they had the initiative and drive. And I'm always very proud of them for doing all that, and still stunned because, like, it just seems so crazy. But they knew what they wanted, you know. And so, like, having them work together in an anthology, have them take responsibility for, like, their their contribution, which was like maybe 12 pages or 6 pages or whatever they said that they were going to do, they felt a strong sense of ownership, a lot of pride. I wish I had the book here. It's beautiful. It's like this little square bound, like I think like a 6x9 book. It's just great. I think it's something that that made a mark on their lives, I think. Afterwards, some of them came out with incredible business skills. Some were just, they felt very, like they were sure. They were sure and confident about their abilities and what they could do. I was surprised that it helped.
That's so cool. I'm going to be very mindful of time. We have the afternoon panel is a little bit shorter than the morning panel, so we actually can't quite go to the full 60 minutes because we have another panel starting at 3. So didn't even realize that. So we're going to go quickly to the fifth one, so creativity, inquiry, and entrepreneurship. So I develop new ideas, I use design thinking skills, I ask questions, I use creative ideas to solve real-world problems. I'll just say the Calvin and Hobbes was me, and I'm actually not the hugest personal fan of Calvin and Hobbes. I know it's sort of a controversial thing to admit to, but I've seen firsthand like Calvin and Hobbes is one of the best things to talk to kids about imagination. For so many people, you ask a lot of creators, they'll point to things like Calvin and Hobbes, Mad Magazine. It was like such a great inspiration. I really taught them how to think creatively and also use their own imaginations, and they give a lot of validity to what can happen when you use your imagination.
Bouncing off of that, I would label Cardboard Kingdom the promise of Calvin and Hobbes in the 21st century, and seeing how children can use imagination to address issues that Calvin and Hobbes could have only dreamed of, and that they're friends with each other. So it's not, what if there's one kid with the crazy, what if you shared your crazy imagination and you got buy-in from other people, and like your parents didn't understand why you dressed or presented yourself a certain way, but you present this fantasy world, and then their light bulb goes off, and they're like, oh, that's what my child's trying to tell me. Yeah. Okay.
Does anybody have any other ones they want to call it? If you haven't read I Kill Giants, again, we've talked a lot about books that deal with childhood trauma. I Kill Giants is exceptional. They did make a movie out of it relatively recently, but this is fantastic. It talks a lot about imagination, creativity, but also trying to deal with inner turmoil in a way in which you can't really explain it to other people. But what's fantastic about the graphic storytelling format is, as the reader, we can see all that's going on the inside. We can see a lot of the internal trauma, even though she's having trouble articulating it out to everybody around her. Similar to Lighter Than My Shadow as well, which deals with eating disorder and also trauma. It's, again, we get to see from her perspective what it actually feels like. And when we're talking about empathy and actually reading across the different competencies, that's one of the best things. And being able to sort of, if you will, see inside somebody's head, and that's such a fantastic power of comics and graphic novels that I don't think we give them enough credit for. I Kill Giants. The whole thing in I Kill Giants is she's fighting giants, and it's even sort of, I don't want to do any spoilers, but there's a big question mark. Are these metaphorical giants? Are these actual giants? And it's a really great jumping off point for talking to people about the giants in their life, the fears. That was yours, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry I wrote the description the way I did.
No. No, just kidding.
But it also applies to Lighter Than My Shadow, where the protagonist of that book, she might be asked a simple question about would she like to eat some more dinner, and from the parent's perspective, she just says, no, I'm good. But in her head, there's this shadow that's following her. It's all these insecurities. It's all these thoughts that lead her to her, what is it? When you don't eat?
Oh,
it's called anorexia. Gosh, thank you. And, that she has to go through like 100 different decisions and talk herself through the courage to like just eat one extra bite of something, but that to an outside observer, it's just a very plain, more mundane interaction. So, yeah.
With the media literacy note, that sort of occurred to me last night. I guess the idea is that by having students craft messages, develop an understanding of how they're made, the impact of the visual aspect of comics, and how they speak to different audiences, the intermingling of like image and idea, and how that's something that can be deciphered and understood and interpreted. I think is an important aspect, I think, of all this.
100%. I mean, we talk a lot about media literacy and, you know, decoding alternative facts, propaganda. Students, this is a great exercise in talking about how we introduce brands, how we have targeted audiences, how we're maybe cropping visual images, how we're presenting. I'm a huge fan of courtroom illustrations because a lot of times we present those as accurate rendering of what's happening, but ultimately an illustrator is depicting that. They are making choices. Should I use charcoal or should I use colored pencil? How should I render the angles in somebody's face? And there's a lot of interesting research that, depending on how the verdict is maybe going, somebody might appear slightly sharper in the illustrations, a bit softer. They're also, what are they leaving in and what are they keeping in the image that they're depicting? And same with photos. Yeah.
It wasn't up here, but I recently read the To Kill a Mockingbird. As soon as you said that, I was thinking, that's what I wanted to mention. Because I've seen the movie, read the book, I read the graphic novel, I've listened to the audiobook, you know. And it was interesting reading the graphic novel of To Kill a Mockingbird because perspective definitely comes into play. And I was thinking about the courtroom. And I also was thinking about Black Lives Matter, especially because... Again, there's that visual moment, you know, when you see Tom Robinson and you're like, okay, I actually have something to think about here. And I know it's that inquiry all of a sudden in terms of how something that's been around for a long time that I would love to, I'd say, you know what, read the graphic novel and tell me what you're thinking and how that, because just even the court scenes make you look at Atticus differently. You know, at the end of the book, I questioned if I enjoyed it as much as I had enjoyed it the first time I'd read the book. Because all of a sudden, I had a lot more questions going on in my head, and I was thinking, oh, this is a great entry point for that.
I love that as like a classroom activity to take something like To Kill a Mockingbird and have all the different iterations, too, of it.
Yeah. Oh. Because even at the back, you appreciate, this is the thing about when someone adapts something into a graphic novel, is that this is, they write that at the end. This is my interpretation, and this is, you know, I take that time. And I'm thinking, well, that's what we want our students or our readers to be doing, right? We want them to be thinking about what they're reading and interpreting it the way that they need to interpret it and asking the questions.
Yeah, we want them to ask questions.
Yes. It like brings that metacognitive process into it for them.
For sure.
So we've run out of time. This panel is very short.
It's purely related to the last point.
Don't have time. Sorry. Gotta go.
Media smarts. It's an Ontario developed research.
We have on the link for everything. So if you want to take, and we'll also be tweeting this out. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.